we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Do you want your doctors to be an artificial intelligence-spewing robot or a puppet of the government or corporate entities or a free-thinking, inventive, scientific, compassionate person? I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. There's so much going on in the world, inflation, China, floods, fires. So first, let's talk about a few good things in medicine. There's so many good things that happened in medicine through the years. A few were by chance, by serendipity, but most came from years of hard work and trial and error. We take so many medical advances for granted that complaining about the fluffiness of hospital pillows had become the number one concern for many patients on exit surveys. Let's look at a few discoveries. How about vitamins? The discovery of vitamins and diseases due to deficiencies of vitamins led to better health, even for impoverished populations. A big one is scurvy, that I doubt that too many people in the United States these days have scurvy. And there's a few cases around the world, though, and weakness and tiredness and tooth loss, bleeding gums, slow wound healing. These are some of the symptoms, but all the way back in 1753, a Scottish surgeon named James Lind saw that lemons and limes could prevent scurvy. By the 1900s, scientists found that vitamin C was the key ingredient in these citrus fruits. Then there's vitamin D. That helps us absorb calcium into our bones. Vitamin D deficiency causes rickets, and rickets causes soft bones in children. And there's still, and I can see older people, and you can tell they had rickets. Their legs are kind of bowed, and the bones continue to be weak. Another common deficiency is vitamin B1. That's called thiamine. And its deficiency causes something called beriberi. And beriberi is pretty bad. It has nerve and heart and brain abnormalities, and that can lead to dementia and death. Chronic alcoholics have a thiamine deficiency, causing multiple problems, including dementia. Now, recent studies have come out, and now there's been a lot of articles written saying that most people don't need vitamin supplements because the food they eat supplies the necessary nutrients. So they're saying the value of vitamins for good health remains unclear. The thing that's interesting, at the same time, there's multiple articles talking about how our nutrition is terrible and how the Western diet is terrible, and we need to have a diet with less of these refined sugars and all this sort of thing, and we're becoming a fast food nation. And so I wonder how many vitamins are in a lot of people's diets. So this remains to be seen. Over time, we found that a lot of people who are overweight are actually malnourished because they don't have the right foods that they've eaten. So who knows? There may be a group of people, even people who have food supplies, that need vitamins to stay healthy. Another thing we take for granted is the existence of insulin. Insulin was discovered in 1920. It changed diabetics' lives from miserable and very short lives. And now it's manageable. with a variety of technologies, including insulin pumps. Well, but what we don't like about insulin is the high price. I mean, over the last 10 years, the cost of insulin has tripled in the United States, and the out-of-pocket costs have doubled. One in four patients say they ration their insulin because they can't afford it. Well, I little off point from happy things, but why is that price so high? Well, three companies, Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and Sanofi, control 90% of the global insulin market. Then they have this pay for delay agreements between the original patent holder and then the would-be generic biosimilar manufacturers. This means it's actually legal for one insulin producer to pay another one not to enter the market. Well, this is a whole topic, and I'm going to see if I can get Dr. Marion Mass back on the show to take a deep dive into these insulin issues. But let's move on back to some positive. X-rays. I think about X-rays. You know, people take a fall, have some back pain, have arm pain. They go to the clinic for an X-ray. They don't even think about what a miracle it is to have imaging in our lives. Wilhelm Röntgen, and we've heard the word Röntgen as a measurement of X-rays, he was young. He was a physicist, and he discovered by accident the X-ray technique. He was studying cathode rays, and cathode rays are streams of electrons that leave a negative electrode in a discharge tube. So, you know, I'm not a physicist, but he observed that when he was in a darkened room, the cathode ray tube covered with a barium compound caused a fluorescent effect. Since cathode rays are invisible, he didn't know what these rays were, so he just called them X-rays. So I have to laugh about this. He created an image of his wife's hand. She was a pretty brave woman to stick her hand behind this thing. Who knew what it was? Within a year in Scotland, Glasgow's big hospital opened the world's very first radiology department, and other hospitals in Europe soon followed, and X-rays became used routinely. They were used by battlefield doctors to locate bullets, bone damage, and then even used to diagnose tuberculosis with the chest X-ray. This brought him the Nobel Prize in 1901. What I think is interesting about this, and a couple weeks ago, we talked about talking truth, even when it was dangerous, and people who invented things that were mocked at the time of the invention. Well, guess what? He was mocked. A New York Times journalist referred to X-rays as, quote, an alleged discovery of a method to photograph the invisible, and went on to disparage poor Conrad Röntgen. So by the 1950s, doctors and physicists recognized that X-rays had risks and that the radiation could raise the risk of cancer. This makes me think I'm going to do a show on the government's radiation experiments that led to that knowledge. It's kind of like something, we probably talked about it a month or so ago, some of the harmful things the government has done, you know, unconsented experiments. So maybe we'll get into that too, but back to the positive. So after the X-rays were found that they could be harmful, we see the development of ultrasound. And that's just used all the time now, and that came around in about the 1950s. And so sound waves are used to create a digital image. And the good thing about it was safe for pregnant women. And that's when they started looking at babies in utero and could see their development, early on. And then by the late 60s, we had CAT scans, good old CAT scans. And that was the computers, it's CAT scan, I don't know, it stands for computed tomography. And so it's not really like a CAT, C-A-T, it's C-T. And that diagnoses tons of things, and it can do more of a deep dive than a regular X-ray. And then we had MRIs that were discovered in the 1970s. And those can see even more. And now we've moved on to something called functional MRIs, where you have the patient move or talk or do something, and you can actually see the workings of the brain while they're doing that. So then, of course, since I'm an anesthesiologist, I think one of the best discoveries is anesthetic. For years, doctors tried to find ways to do surgery and not have the patient screaming and dying from pain. They tried opium and all sorts of things, cocaine. And finally, when I kind of cringed to think about it, that the surgeons actually operated on conscious patients. But in 1846, William Morton used ether as an anesthetic during surgery. It was successful. The patient woke up, didn't feel a thing, didn't remember a thing. And I look at anesthesia now, there's so many options. There's ways to do it all through intravenous drugs. And, you know, it's so sad. When I was a resident, fentanyl had come out, and it was one of God's gifts to anesthesia, short acting and very powerful. And you could do short cases and know the drug would be out of someone's system. And now I look at fentanyl, people just think it's something that kills people. Obviously, in the wrong hands, it does. And it just saddens me that all this stuff is coming out of China and across the border. And all these poor people are dying from fentanyl overdoses. It doesn't take a lot. And it was one of the good things about it for the operating room, but one of the bad things about it, when something like this comes out in the public square, so to speak. The next big wonderful thing is DNA. And I mean, anybody who watches these crime shows or reads the crime fiction or nonfiction, you see the importance of DNA. And the Innocence Project with DNA has saved people off of death row. Well, we know it's changed medicine. The thing that's interesting, and probably most people don't know, is that it was discovered all the way back in 1869 by a Swiss physician chemist. And he called it nucleon. And in 1871, he published the results. And what he'd done was a chemical analysis of pus cells, and he showed that the nuclei of these cells contained a phosphorus-rich chemical, and he called it nucleon because it was in the cell nucleus. It was given little notice, and then lo and behold, fast forward to 1953, when Watson and Crick noted the same chemical, and then they discovered that double helix structure. In 1962, they received the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. So we all know that DNA has helped us discover understanding of diseases, and now they're even able to fix some damaged DNA and various types of gene therapy. The really big thing is in 2013 that the full sequence of the human genome, all the genes that make up our DNA, was put together. And so now we do know some single genes that cause diseases and can get treatments. And the other thing that discovering DNA has done, it's kind of made us think deeply on the nature of humanity and our role. Makes us think about evolution, creation of life, how different we are, and that we all are individuals. When we come back after the break, we'll talk about another couple of really good things and get into some changes that have happened in medicine. I want to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse, always a beat ahead. We've got our free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. And you can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 with an encore at 10 p.m. on iHeartRadio and at 8 a.m. the next morning. You can listen on our media player from any web browser, anywhere in the world. And the best part is all shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours. And the episodes are on lots of these podcast networks, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher. So make it easy. Bookmark AmericaOutLoud.com/pulse. On Mondays, you've got me, and then you've got concerned doctors, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Then we've got Dr. Peter McCulloch and Malcolm Out Loud and Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. It's a great lineup. And we have a new feature. If you have any questions, you can email them to AmericaOutLoud.com/pulse, and we'll make sure it gets answered.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCulloch talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
So, back to some good things that happened in medicine. Antibiotics. Back in 1910, Paul Ehrlich introduced an arsenic-based drug called sulfarsen, and it was a remedy for syphilis. And his search for a specific drug for a specific disease was really the beginning of antibacterial treatment. Now, what most people remember is Alexander Fleming's penicillin, the truly the world's first antibiotic, and he accidentally discovered that when it killed some mold in a Petri dish, and that was back in 1928. And now there's antibiotics, various generations of antibiotics. And for a while, of course, people were overusing antibiotics. And then that led to bacteria being resistant to the current antibiotics. So we had to make more and more and more. And so now they've come out with another generation of a new type of antibiotic that supposedly will help with all these resistant strains. We shall see. There's so many other things like stethoscopes and thermometers and hypodermic needles. You know, they used to use quill pens to inject. Ugh, it's hard to even imagine. And then there's defibrillators and pacemakers, laparoscopy and blood types. All these things have really advanced medicine. And we've had very inventive doctors, scientists, and free thinkers that have come up with these things. And of course, it's hard not to mention vaccines. Now, vaccines have done a lot of good things for medical care. But unfortunately, this whole COVID-19 thing and those products that came out have started to give vaccines a bad name. And it's really kind of sad because we're talking 250 years of research, let's say, since the original smallpox vaccine. And to have people's confidence in such an advancement just be stripped away with some, I'll say, wrong moves by government or public health entities. So the best thing in medicine is good old-fashioned doctors, doctors who made house calls and knew the family. That was the best medicine. But so where are we now? Some of the things, my big pet peeves of changes in medicine, I'm just going to start because I watched TV last night. Medicine ads, pharmaceutical ads. It seems like treatments and COVID, cancer treatments, all that stuff, you don't see it discussed as much in the news in sort of a rational way. And then all we see are these TV ads and medications for bent carrots, and then we have colitis and cancer, and it's Madison Avenue medicine. And then you wonder, is this where medical students are going to learn about medication straight from the pharmaceutical company? And one of the things that really gets me in these ads is the people who are taking these wonderful medicines, and it doesn't matter what disease they have, whether it's diabetes or metastatic cancer, whatever it might be, they're always frolicking around and doing adventurous things like zip lining that most people don't do anyway. It's as though it reminds me of that old joke, but doctor, can I play the violin? You know, it's like, well, I couldn't play it before. That it's just always making these things try to look better than they are. And it just seems like such an oversell. And, you know, and here I was suspended from Twitter for a day for tweeting an article about someone who was telling her story about a vaccine injury. So it's like, who gets to decide what's true, what's not true, or misleading or not misleading? It's crazy. But these ads are crazy because I think they give patients a false sense of how good they are. Then the pet peeve, of course, as a doctor, is seeing with all the available technology, we know that house calls for most problems won't do the trick. But what I see is the mindset of many doctors have changed. More and more doctors are working for large health systems, and more work for these large companies or the hospital. They're in private practice now. And along with this, we see the shift from doctors being the type of person who speaks out, and they've just gradually been emasculated. Doctors have become compliant, submissive, acquiescent, and just frankly, invertebrate. You know, they got used to taking marching orders from insurance companies. No, we're not going to cover this. We're not going to cover that. And then more became employed by the hospitals. And it's like, well, if you want to keep your job, you toe the line. If you want patient visits longer than 7 minutes, too bad. 7 minutes is all you get. And the electronic health records, medication formularies, treatment algorithms, for all from these corporate entities trying to practice medicine, has led to dehumanizing both the doctors and the patients. And I just hate to see that. And we're seeing some of the results of that. It's one thing to say, okay, well, I'm going to give this drug because it's on the formulary and I have to. The next phase we're seeing is getting on these bandwagons that have more to do with politics than science. Let's look at the gender bandwagon. Medicine is buying into this gender fluidity fad. Hopefully, we'll catch on that this is a dangerous trend of steering troubled children into really what's still uncharted territory. Great Britain has just closed its big transgender clinic. It was for gender identity development in children. It was called Unsafe for Children, knowing that the drugs and treatment and certainly surgical procedures can cause permanent changes and then very traumatic for people, of course, who change their mind. And adults now are saying that they weren't given the full story about all the ill effects of treatments. And then in scientific articles, in our new speak that's coming out of the AMA and medical school curriculum, are getting rid of the word woman. We have birthing person, people who have abortions, Harvard, Columbia, and all sorts of other medical schools have these guidelines. And in Columbia University, they even suggested replacing the word women with people with uteruses or birthing people. I mean, it doesn't even sound right. And obviously, not scientific. Here we have the discovery of DNA. We know about chromosomes and genes, and then suddenly we're birthing people. Oh. Then they've brought in race as a social construct. This is this idea from critical race theory, which we'll talk about in depth in another show. But there are some disease processes that are more common in certain races. We have to admit that. The key is you treat all patients with dignity and respect, but you don't ignore reality. So this diversity, equity, and inclusion movement, it's almost, well, I'll just say it's disturbing. We know that we just want to give the best medical care to patients, period. But now we have a small, very influential group, interestingly, called White Coats for Black Lives. And they're in the medical schools now. And it's not fringe in the sense that a lot of medical schools are actually listening. Top schools like University of North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, UC Davis are taking some of their ideas and putting them into their action plans for racial justice. I'm going to go through some of their vision and values, and I'll tell you, it's a far cry from the quest for racial and gender equality from the 60s. White Coats for Black Lives says, quote, "Our job is twofold. One, dismantling dominant exploitative systems in the United States, which are largely reliant on anti-Black racism, colonialism, cis-heteropatriarchy, white supremacy, and capitalism. And two, rebuilding a future that supports the health and well-being of marginalized communities." This sounds more like politics than patient health. Now, admittedly, politics are behind health policies. We have a Health and Human Services Department that makes policies. But my goodness, this whole anti-Black racism and dismantling dominant exploitative systems in the United States, the language, the rhetoric, does not sound like patient care is at the core of the organization. They've decided that medical practice is just one more oppressive structure, and that medical practice in the United States is informed by race. And it tries to legitimize race through false biological arguments. One of the things that's bothersome that is true, that everything doesn't have to do with race, but some things do. Black people in the United States have higher rates of high blood pressure. Now, this group says it's not because of any genetic issues. It's because of systemic oppression. Well, what about Black people who haven't been oppressed? So I don't know. And as our DNA knowledge advances, we may find specific genes. And then what do you say about it then? They're saying that if you look at biology, that then that gives the drug companies a chance to profiteer off of Black and brown people by giving them drugs to treat whatever this biological problem is. I think what's kind of interesting about saying that is if you're talking about profiteering of drug companies, they profiteer off of white folks too. So, it's kind of, they didn't just decide to profiteer off of Black people. The other thing that is interesting to me is they want medical schools and the changes to follow the guidance from, quote, Black queer feminists, and that we have to unlearn toxic medical knowledge and relearn medical care that centers on the needs of Black people and communities. That's very true. We do have to look at medical care that looks at all communities. And that's something that certainly in some areas, not where I trained, was lacking. Where I trained, free clinics were kind of really part of the curriculum. But I'm sure there's many places where that wasn't something that was looked at in medical school. This is the sort of thing where kind of it almost foments hate and people thinking negatively and certainly ignoring science and biology doesn't get anybody anywhere. It certainly doesn't get Black people healthier. After the break, we'll talk about some more of the political agenda, which in my view, doesn't have a whole lot to do with health. I want to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. We've got our free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. The Pulse is on every weekday at 5 p.m. with an encore at 10 p.m. That's Eastern Time, and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. And all shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours. And there's so many podcast networks, Apple and Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeart. So almost everybody has one of those. So make it easy. Bookmark AmericaOutloud.com/pulse. We've got a great lineup, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley, Dr. Peter McCullough, and Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. And our new feature has been quite popular. This is, if you have questions, you can send them in to AmericaOutloud.com/pulse, and we will see to it that it's answered.
It's summertime. Ready for your vacation to the beach, the lake, or the mountains? But what about your accommodations? Ever wonder what germs were left behind by the previous guests? Kathy G. from Tulsa says the Genesis Fogger gives her peace of mind and confidence when traveling. With Genesis, she knows that the air and surfaces in her vacation rental are free of bacteria and viruses left behind by the previous occupants. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
How the spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Back to White Coats for Black Lives. These things are such mouthfuls of rhetoric. They want non-hierarchical, deprofessionalized medical care and admit that the underlying goal is to have some sort of universal healthcare system, but they want to define medicine as just another trade and even question the need for professional degrees. They want to remove licensing and practice guidelines that discriminate on the basis of your degree type. So that's like MDs, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, all, it wouldn't matter what kind of degree you have. You just go out there and practice medicine. And one of the things, and I've talked about this before, I think I did a whole show on it, is obesity. They say that medical providers, I hate that word, you are what you are, you're a doctor, you're a nurse, you're a physical therapist or whatever, but we must unlearn the false equivalency between weight and health, and quote unquote, fat people must have access to affirming healthcare free of stigma and guilt. Well, this is kind of ridiculous because now it's shown cancer is caused by genetic changes that break down normal constraints in cell growth. It's known that obesity and being overweight increases the risk of developing cancer. You know, they hadn't really known why. And now some new research says that lipids associated with obesity make cancer cells more aggressive and more likely to form actual tumors. So how can you say we're supposed to just ignore obesity? Nobody wants to ridicule or belittle someone who's overweight, but certainly it's appearing, common sense kind of was telling people it wasn't healthy. And now more research, certainly at least in the cancer area, is saying that obesity appears to help trigger cancer. One of the things that I find interesting as part of this group's manifesto is to abolish prisons, that's going to lead to more equity in healthcare. It's beyond me. I don't really get the connection, but maybe I'm a little slow and somebody can instruct me as what abolishing prisons has to do with healthcare. Now, the other thing is reproductive justice. Okay, there's a lot of people who are calling that and they want to make sure abortions are available to everyone, but they also want to demedicalize birthing, meaning anybody can help with childbirth and you don't need a doctor. You only, of course, you need a doctor when you need a doctor, but by the time it comes, it might be too late for the poor baby who might have some sort of permanent damage. They also want a mandatory living wage, abolish child protective services because it's just a means to control Black and brown people. They want reparations for Indigenous communities. So this makes you wonder that is this just a way to change the political system, or is it really to try to help people out? Somehow, I think it's more politics than patient care. I mean, obviously, you have to change policies, but focusing on this intersectionality and race as a social contract and oppression, and white privilege, all these non-healthcare factors really kind of makes you wonder. And the Association of American Medical Colleges has come out with a model curriculum, and it focuses on all these issues. And some of the things, some of these words come right out of this manifesto type language. Oh yeah, another one is anti-colonialism. So what do you think the unifying factor is? It seems to be government control. And if turning medical students into little Marxists happens to be what you need to do to get it, then so be it. There was a fellow named Antonio Gramsci, and he was a founding member and one-time leader of the Communist Party of Italy. And he believed institutions should be infiltrated with Marxist-minded folks. Now, it's happening in colleges, and it's all the way down to grammar schools now. And this equity movement, of course, is the perfect tool. How can somebody object to working hard to treat all people equally? And the gender fluidity movement is all part of that propaganda to change cultural norms. Now, we've all seen an increasing number of people becoming, well, let's just say it, indoctrinated in college. And it's kind of interesting to me why this big push for everyone to go to college, even though 40% don't graduate, and a large percentage of those who do graduate get a job that didn't need a college degree. So what's the value of college? indoctrination. I mean, we don't even have any moral standards anymore. We're told that moral relativism is compassionate and inclusive and sensitive to other cultures. And then it kind of bootstraps on that the good of many supersedes the good of the individual. Well, this is where it gets bad in medicine. If you kind of keep on trying to look at that and forget about the individual, then we've sort of lost it. We've lost that doctor-patient relationship and that individualized patient care. You know, great philosophers through the ages have said that a free society has to be based on respect for individual rights. Kant, Immanuel Kant, all the way back in the 1700s, he said each person has inherent equal dignity. And he said, people are not just a resource. They're never a means to an end. This is asserting people are individuals. John Stuart Mill in the 1800s, that power can only be exerted over an individual in, if you're in a civilized community, to prevent harm to somebody else, but never when you say, well, it's for your own good, just like how we've heard with COVID and some of these public health dicta. And in the 1900s, we have Carl Jung, the psychologist. And I think he kind of said it all about the individual. He said the individual has a real existence in the world, but society is an abstraction representing an ever-changing collection of individuals. He said, all life is individual life in which alone the ultimate meaning is to be found. So what's happened? The individual patients have been lost in the dust of government dictates, not necessarily based on data. You see this new student group who's completely ignoring science. The gender stuff is ignoring science. It seems like it's just a way to get us to all fall in line. You have the government, and the politicians, and the media. They've become the new medical experts, the new scientists. And then what happened to the forward thinkers and inventors? We have to get used to being mocked because they're going to be mocked. They're going to be trashed. Now, we know COVID upended lots of lives, some because a family member became seriously ill. Others lost a job, their mental health issues due to the lockdowns. People had to watch their children emotionally and mentally backslide because of the masking and lack of contact with their friends. So how did doctors, so many of them, just stand by and not look at the evidence? The doctors were just as frightened as the general public, but it's like they didn't stop to think. We've had lots of coronaviruses in the past, and many cause the common cold. And everybody knows they've been working on it, something to cure the common cold and haven't been able to do it. And so we knew things about the coronavirus, yet we let somehow the government take over. Now, I think some people's eyes were opened with some of these policies, but just be aware, the National Disaster Medical System goes into effect. All that's needed is for the government to declare a public health emergency. Then they can monitor us, quarantine us, isolate us, basically control their lives. And part of the rules say it's almost, well, no, it's not hard to believe anymore. Quote, if a patient who both refuses treatment and refuses to self-quarantine, HHS and CDC can arrange for adequate food and water, appropriate accommodation, appropriate medical treatment, and means of necessary communication for individuals who are apprehended or held in quarantine or isolation. This has turned individual patients into criminals. And they've said, when an individual is identified as a threat to the health and welfare of others, as such, when patient refuses medical treatment at a healthcare facility and refuses to self-quarantine, the government may take that individual into custody. My goodness, this just, I have not seen news reports. I don't know whether it's happened or not. We've certainly seen pictures of people being whisked away by the police because they don't have a mask on. I haven't seen anyone jailed or put in the hospital. The fact that there's a plan that all the government has to do is declare a public health emergency, and we can take people into custody because they don't toe the line, it makes you wonder what's next. And we all wonder what's next. So I guess going back to the start of my rant, all these discoveries were wonderful. And to be fair, they're still happening. But again, the episode of the COVID vaccines has made us wonder. And some of our great hosts have talked about these. And be sure to listen to their shows because they're more experts in that regard than I certainly am. And they were approved fast, again, all under this whole emergency use authorization. And it begins to make you wonder. And people are reporting all these side effects and injuries. And it seems to be falling on deaf ears. And it's not the only thing. Look at this faster than usual approver, the new Alzheimer's drug, Aduhelm, that only had one study showing some benefit. The FDA advisory panel was against it. And in fact, two FDA advisory board members quit over Aduhelm's approval, even though there wasn't good evidence for efficacy. The FDA gave the company 9 years to confirm the drug's possible benefit in a post-approval study. Did that $56,000 a year annual list price for the drug have anything to do with it? Well, it makes everybody wonder. So the FDA process might be so corrupted by money and power seekers that we don't even know what to trust. And so, yeah, we're having some wonderful new drugs invented. We have so many new technologies. There's the artificial intelligence, 3D printers of organs. There's wonderful things happening in medicine. But I suppose my mind has to drift to sometimes point out the negative, the politically negative. And the politically negative will ultimately hurt patients. And why are we here? We're here to help patients. We're here to first do no harm. We've got to bring the trust back into medicine. We've got to, well, let's just say it, we've got to support the Mavericks. It's been the Mavericks that have moved medicine forward. We don't want bad medicine. We don't want quacks, but we can't have the government or corporate entities telling doctors what to do. We can't have medical students turned into spineless drones. So that's my rant for the day. And think about it. But you know, there's good doctors out there. You should go to jointhewedge.com or aapsonline.com and click on where you can find doctors who are in private practice, and many of them are self-pay and give you all the time in the world that you want. So thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. We've got our free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can hear the Pulse every weekday at 5 p.m. Eastern with an encore at 10 p.m. and on iHeartRadio the next morning at 8 a.m. All shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours. The episodes are on lots of podcast networks, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeart. So make it easy on yourself. Bookmark AmericaOutLoud.com/pulse. We've got lots of people. The best thing I like about Pulse is that it's a different person every day. We've got me and Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley, Dr. Peter McCulloch and Malcolm Out Loud have a Q&A on Wednesdays. Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan, and he's quite a famous psychiatrist, really broke ground in psychiatry and exposed frontal lobotomies and ECTs, whole lots of stuff. Talk about somebody who's really for the patient. And our new feature, questions, you can send them in to AmericaOutLoud.com/pulse. So whether you agree or have other opinions, please share the show. And thank you for listening. And until next week, say it loud, I'm free and I'm proud.